The Afghan people cannot suffer a collective punishment because the Taliban misbehave.
With massive aid pledged, how to distribute it in Afghanistan? It's Monday, October 18th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, getting Afghan families back together. Students warm up to climate action. Indonesia's pandemic predators. The business of fame and fortune. COVID optimism. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The European Union pledged more than $1 billion in humanitarian aid to Afghanistan and neighboring countries as the United Nations warns millions of Afghans are facing famine. But the United States has been cautious, saying it is sending humanitarian aid but cannot provide funds directly to the Taliban-led government until they start respecting human rights and women's rights. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports on more details emerging from the recent emergency conference.
The situation in Afghanistan is dire, especially for children. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called on the world to take immediate action and inject liquidity into the Afghan economy to avoid collapse.
The Afghan people cannot suffer a collective punishment because the Taliban misbehave. People should not die of hunger in any circumstance.
This week, the European Union pledged more than $1 billion in new humanitarian aid to Afghanistan at an emergency virtual conference. The U.S. has approved nearly $64 million in recent weeks. Reporters asked State Department spokesperson Ned Price if the U.S. is prepared to do more.
So we are, of course, not in a position to provide financial support to the Taliban or any future Afghan government until and unless we see to it that these core requirements are being met and the rights of the people of Afghanistan are being fully respected and enforced.
In a VOA interview, a Taliban deputy minister called on the U.S. and other countries to unfreeze Afghan assets held abroad.
Freezing Afghanistan's assets is an injustice toward the people of Afghanistan. We are negotiating with the Americans. We are also negotiating with other countries and the international banks to release this money because it belongs to the Afghan people. This is the Afghan people's bread and butter, and releasing this money is crucial to solving the economic problems of the Afghan population.
Withholding direct aid and freezing assets are having an impact on the Afghan economy. William Byrd of the U.S. Institute of Peace told VOA.
I mean, the real problem with asset freeze is it stopped the flow of any foreign currency banknotes into the country. So everybody is being constrained by just the lack of money supply. And paradoxically, also, the new Afghan government can't actually print any money because that was printed abroad.
Some Afghans are lining up at banks to withdraw some of their money, as Michael Kugelman explains.
As a result, banks now have much less money than they had in previous years, which has been one of the big concerns that, you have huge lines to get to access money in banks when the Taliban even allows banks to be open.
With salaries not being paid and food scarce in many areas, some Afghans are trying to cross the border to Iran, with many being caught and sent back. Experts tell VOA if the humanitarian situation does not improve, millions of Afghans will likely try to flee. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Would you like to find out more? You can by following us on Twitter at VOA Asia, Facebook at VOA Asia, and stop by our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. ASEAN excludes Myanmar junta leader from summit. U.S. says Cambodia not transparent about Chinese role in naval base construction. New Zealand vaccinates 2.5% of its population against COVID in a single day. Singapore's new powerful foreign interference law stirs fears of abuse. Amazon removes app for Quran and Bible from Apple Store in China. Expanded coverage of these stories and more can be found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and at our website. That's voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. The UN Refugee Agency is calling on countries to ease bureaucratic requirements and speed up Afghan family reunification procedures. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More than 3.5 million Afghans are displaced inside Afghanistan, and many more are displaced across the region and neighboring countries as refugees. UN Refugee Agency spokeswoman Shabia Mantu says it is difficult to collect data under the current turbulent conditions. Therefore, it is hard to know how many people would qualify for family reunification. However, based on a 10-year study done before the current situation, she says the number is likely to be significant.
So from 2010 to 2019, I believe 286,000, a bit over 286,000 Afghans were granted family permits in OECD countries and Brazil. I don't know that it's indicative, but it just it does give a bit of a picture.
Mantu says many separated families abroad approach UNHCR offices desperately concerned about the safety and welfare of their relatives who remain in Afghanistan. She describes conditions inside Afghanistan as exceptionally challenging. She says the UNHCR is urging countries to simplify family reunification admission procedures to help protect lives.
While many countries have specific legal frameworks that provide for refugee family reunification and other specific safeguards and waivers, UNHCR is worried that many refugees could face considerable administrative barriers in realizing this legal right. Some of these barriers include prohibitive costs, lengthy waiting times, and inflexible documentation requirements.
Mantu suggests countries could fast-track family reunification by adopting humanitarian visa programs, prioritizing procedures for Afghan families, and applying liberal and humane criteria in identifying family members who qualify. She says many people likely will have to wait a long time before they can join their families in a third country. Given their precarious situation, she says they would qualify as refugees, making them eligible for all refugee protection safeguards. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, young people heat up their activity to help cool the climate. Happening now in Asia, Philippines authorities have started inoculating 12 to 17-year-olds with underlying conditions against COVID-19 as it ramps up vaccination amid the spread of the Delta variant. An initial 60 teens received their first dose of the Pfizer vaccine at a Manila hospital late last week. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. The youngest generation will be facing deep climate challenges in the decades to come. Thousands of students and schoolchildren have attended dozens of rallies in Australia to demand urgent action on climate change. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
School strike for climate activists in Australia say the global warming crisis is a time bomb, and about 40 protests have been organised across the country. They're being joined by Indigenous communities, trade unions, and many parents. In the states of New South Wales and Victoria, events are being held online because of COVID-19 restrictions. Campaigners are demanding Australia abandon new coal, oil and gas projects. The School Strike for Climate group was set up in 2018. One of its organisers, 17-year-old Natasha Abewikrama, says urgent action is needed.
Students and young people have had enough, and we need net zero by 2035, and we need to have like a just transition towards renewable energy. We need to stop funding fossil fuels. That's the main message. And what we're demanding is essentially the bare minimum. This isn't a luxury. A safe future and a safe climate is not a luxury. It's the bare minimum that we as young people deserve.
This week, Australia's centre-right government is meeting to discuss a net zero emissions policy. Prime Minister Scott Morrison has yet to commit to a deadline to achieve carbon neutrality. He has said he wants to achieve it as soon as possible, but he hasn't outlined any measures to do so. There are deep divisions within his coalition government. Some lawmakers are staunch supporters of the fossil fuel industry. Australia is one of the world's major exporters of coal, which generates about 70% of domestic electricity supplies. Conservationists argue, however, that Australia has the capacity to be a green energy superpower. Every day, 1,000 rooftop solar systems are installed across the suburbs of its towns and cities. Nowhere else in the world is the uptake so high. On a far grander scale, the world's biggest solar farm in Australia's Northern Territory is expected to create thousands of jobs and generate billions of dollars in revenue. There will be electricity to export. It plans to supply 15% of Singapore's power needs starting in 2027. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You'll find this and all of our stories on Facebook at VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Hong Kong and mainland authorities seized more than $500,000 worth of smuggled Australian lobsters, believed to be bound for the mainland. 13 people were arrested. China restricted imports of lobsters amid escalating tensions with Australia. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue with VOA Asia. Scammers have long preyed upon the economically vulnerable. But in Indonesia, economic hardship and increased online activity during the pandemic have led to a boom in predatory loan apps, as VOA's Rendy Wiksana reports.
This woman has asked VOA to hide her real name and merely identify her as Santi.
While her name has been changed, her experiences, she tells VOA, are real. She signed on to an online loan app back in 2018, which turned out to be a predatory loan.
I needed the money for my child's school tuition. One day, I scrolled on the Google Play Store and discovered a number of online loan apps. I gave one a try, and less than an hour later, it was approved. I borrowed around $90, but I had to return $130 with a 7-day grace period for late payments.
After being only 2 days late for her payment, the loan shark hacked into Sandy's phone and broadcast her debt situation to her contacts, including her employers.
A week after my boss got the text, my employers asked me to resign. They immediately cut off my benefits too. They wanted me out for causing inconvenience to the company.
Santis was the first case of online predatory loans handled by the group. But after it made the news, the institute received almost 4,000 similar complaints.
Their interest rates ranged from 0.1% to 4% a day. That accumulates to 120% per month. Our research in 2018 says the average loan was under $150, but they set interest rates so high, some victims needed to pay back thousands of dollars.
Peer-to-peer loans have gained popularity in Indonesia since 2018. But predatory loans using online platforms are also increasing, especially during the pandemic. On top of massive interest, these online loan sharks are notorious for making threats, which happened to other victims who had reached out to someone.
Why don't you dance naked to finish your loan? Or why don't we meet at a hotel? Some even threaten, I will put a giant banner on your house saying you owe us money. These threats had caused them serious mental harm.
Indonesia Financial Services Authority, or Indonesia known as OJK, claimed to have shut down more than 3,300 illegal loan apps on smartphones since 2018. However, apparently, it hasn't seemed to have stopped newer apps to keep showing up.
Today we would block one app, but tomorrow another 1,000 would emerge. Creating such apps is very easy nowadays.
The pandemic, which hit many people's livelihoods, has made these apps even more of a lucrative illicit industry. At the same time, there are few restrictions and not much of enforcement.
There is no strict law that would limit unregistered apps to operate. There is no law to limit interest rates, no clear legal recourse for consumers, no regulation on debt collection methods. There is even no strict sanctions to online loan apps that violate the rules set down by regulators.
Over the past 2 years, the Indonesian government has been cracking down on illegal loan apps, only to discover the crime now has moved to overseas servers.
From a sample of 1,300 illegal loan apps, we found 22% of them use Indonesian servers. 44% are unknown as they offer their services through social media. The rest at 44% use servers abroad, some in Latin America, like Mexico, some in Vietnam.
Among thousands of emerging financial technology services, only 114 are listed legally with the Financial Services Authority. From Jakarta, Indonesia, Randy Wijaksana, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, three Chinese astronauts are now living and working at the Tiangong Space Station and will be there for 6 months. The three lifted off from the Gobi Desert Saturday aboard the Shenzhou 13 spacecraft. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, depending on where you live, fame is being treated differently, as we hear from Chris Cascao in this week's VOA Asia Business Scene.
Chinese state regulations last month banned irrational star chasing. Online celebrity rankings, fundraising, and other tools used by China's fandoms to get their idols trending on social media. In the latest of a series of crackdowns across Chinese society. Fans power China's lucrative idol economy, previously forecast by state media to be worth 140 billion yuan, or 21.6 billion US dollars by 2022. For idol-in-waiting dancer Li Changxi in Shanghai, the crackdown on celebrity culture is a chance for an industry reset.
I think this is urgently needed and necessary at present. We often see some relatively irrational star-chasing behaviors or irrational occurrences in some industries. It needs to be regulated from the outside.
Communist authorities are also worried about idols for another reason: their ability to mobilize fan armies at a moment's notice, often dominating social media for days. Multiple crackdowns have swept the tech, education, and showbiz sectors in recent months, as authorities increasingly target the rich and powerful in a push for greater socioeconomic equality. But it is also partly to instill healthy government-sanctioned societal values in young people, so they are less influenced by wayward celebrities. The Tokyo Game Show welcomed back influencers and media as it opened, but fans were only allowed virtual access to the top games confab. The exhibition showcased Japanese video games and was regularly thronged by more than 250,000 people a year pre-pandemic, but last year it was held entirely online. While many major game shows maintained the virtual format this year, TGS is welcoming media and influencers such as Take, a Japanese YouTuber who was at the event to make content for his 180,000 subscribers.
Seeing the images and getting the latest information is great, but the real essence of video games is playing them, controller in hand. So even if this year it's only open to influencers, I think it's great we have a space to test things out.
With only a select few able to attend in person, the high mass of Japanese gaming is offered an enriched online experience for fans at home and abroad. TGS began in 1996 and was an unmissable industry event in the early 2000s, though its star has faded somewhat in recent years, with big-name releases generally announced at rivals such as E3 and Gamescom. But it has remained wildly popular with gaming fans, and organizers have mooted keeping a virtual element even post-pandemic to give gamers even more access. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
President Joe Biden has expressed optimism about the progress the United States has made against COVID-19. Recent polls have shown that his standing with the American public is entwined with the state of the pandemic in the country. From the White House, Patsy Whitaker-Swara has more.
With his legislative agenda on infrastructure and social spending in limbo, on Thursday, President Joe Biden touted progress in the country's fight against the pandemic.
Nationally, daily cases are down 47%. Hospitalizations are down 38% over the past 6 weeks. Over the past 2 weeks, most of the country has improved as well. Case rates are declining in 39 states, and hospital rates are declining in 38 states.
Assuring Americans that his administration is succeeding in the fight against the pandemic is key to Biden's political viability.
When the vaccine effort was being pretty successful in the spring, we saw his favorability numbers continue to be pretty high. But with the Delta variant and the spike in cases and sort of the resurgence in COVID we've seen over the last couple of months, we've seen Biden losing ground.
The withdrawal from Afghanistan, rising gas prices and inflation, and the surge of migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border are contributing factors to Biden's poll numbers sliding. But pollsters say the pandemic is the key driver. 49.7% of Americans disapprove of the job Biden is doing, compared with 44.7% who approve, according to 538's presidential approval tracker. His poll numbers have been below 50% for a while. Since August 30th, more Americans have disapproved of the president than have approved of him. It's a bad sign for Democrats as the country heads into the 2022 midterm elections.
The midterm elections are usually a referendum on the current administration. So it makes a huge difference for Republican fortunes if Joe Biden's job approval is 55 versus 35.
The White House has blamed COVID case numbers in part to Republicans' resistance to public health measures, including Republican governors blocking Biden's mandate, requiring vaccination or weekly testing for employees of large companies, federal workers and contractors.
Governor Abbott's executive order banning mandates, and I would also note announcement by Governor DeSantis this morning, essentially banning the implementation of mandates, fit a familiar pattern that we've seen of putting politics ahead of public health.
Pollsters say voters don't care who is at fault.
For a lot of Americans, they don't feel like COVID's under control. Why that's happened isn't necessarily material. Biden's the president, so Biden's responsible at the end of the day.
Biden again pleaded for the 66 million unvaccinated Americans to get their shots and called on businesses to step up and back his vaccine mandates. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. All of it brought to you by our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, Chris Cascao, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.